to Deeply Disturbing Things,
the podcast.
I'm Macy.
I'm Naomi.
And we're two professional counselors who like to talk about deeply disturbing things.
This is our therapy.
Join us.
Dive in.
All right. We just recorded our first video, so check it out. It's our first video.
A review video
of some self-care tips, so we'll be getting that out soon. Should be interesting.
And if you have some ideas of stuff, like videos that we should review, let us know.
So check-in, what do you got?
Well, I was just looking to see if I had anything on my list of check-ins. I only have one thing. The NBC reality show,
Ultimate
Slip and Slide.
No, that's not it.
Had to stop filming due to an explosive diarrhea outbreak on set.
Outbreak?
I mean, can you imagine? Slip and slide and diarrhea at the same time.
Yes, I can.
I'm just imagining people just shooting down those things in a
stream
of brown water.
It's like a boat jet, like,
yes,
propelling them forward.
Yes, a rooster tail of diarrhea.
Oh, gross. That sounds horrible.
Honestly, all I have on my check-in list.
That's good. Yeah, no, I don't really have anything either.
We're drinking watermelon wine. It's very strong and tastes like a Jolly Rancher.
The foam the dirt. All right, you get to go first today.
Oh my gosh, so exciting. But I don't want you to see my thing. You're so close. Can you see it?
Yeah.
How about now?
You can keep it there. That's okay. I can't see it now.
Okay. I'm really excited.
I love this Asian glow you have right now.
That's not what the Asian glow is. The Asian glow is when
you've got some Asian glow.
You turn red because of the alcohol.
Is it?
Yeah. It's not like a angelic fairy glow.
Oh.
But I'm glad you thought that I looked angelic.
I'm pretty sure you said that.
Yeah.
I just said Asian glow. But thank you for defining it, then correcting it.
And then making it my own.
And then owning it. Yeah, that's fine.
Classic. Good. I'm all about reclamation for the sake of empowerment.
Good. I will reclaim you.
Thank you. I swear.
I don't know what that means.
We've drank like this much of this.
Cheers.
Cheers. I know it seems like
I drank half.
Much more. Oh, I haven't drank this much. Okay, I'm very excited about this because I have never heard of it, and I learned a lot. I went full research nerd into this.
Full nerd.
Full nerd power. Let me share with you the story of Mary Toft and her rabbits.
I won't lie, I just saw your screen, and I saw a birthing picture, and you said rabbits, and I can
only
imagine.
Can you not look at my screen? This is why you are a cheater.
Gandron cheater.
You are such a cheater. I don't know what to do. Like, this is so precarious. I'm
maybe
like holding
maybe
this
print it out.
I don't want to waste paper and throw papers around like
you. You can recycle it.
This way I can.
I don't even have papers with me today. Did you notice that? Mm. I know.
We'll see how that turns out.
I know.
In the 18th century, Mary Toft, a poor, illiterate woman.
It's very judgmental.
Was not my words.
I'm sure she was very strong as a woman.
Well, I mean, those are just two characteristics. We don't need to limit her. She was also...
Is it hard to continue now listing things about her?
Those were not my words, by the
way. I know.
So poor, I mean, that's important, actually.
She had a low socioeconomic status.
When we get into mm-hmm. possible motivation.
Okay.
And illiterate as well, mm-hmm. because...
Okay, there's purpose behind those words.
There, I mean, it just shows that she was in a different class, in a very strong class system times.
Mm-hmm.
But she had other qualities, such as resourcefulness.
Mm-hmm.
So Mary Toft convinced doctors, scientists, and even the king that she had given birth to rabbits.
Ooh.
You ever known anyone to give birth to rabbits that wasn't a rabbit?
No.
So Mary Toft lived in Godalming in Surrey.
Godalming?
Probably not how you pronounce it. And she surprised her family one day by going into labor because nobody knew that she was pregnant. And then even more surprisingly, she labored out something that looked like a small animal.
Labored out.
Yeah, pushed it, pushed like.
Labored out.
You know, the labor, like the, and the push.
I try to avoid it.
So her explanation about why she gave birth to this little thing that was like a little rabbit was rooted in the long discredited theory of maternal impression. Have you ever heard of that theory?
No.
I hadn't either. That's why I was like,
ooh, new thing.
Nerd cape on. Research, go. Instantly, 20 tabs open. So maternal impression was an old theory, but.
No, you're fine.
Am I stopping things?
No, you go.
What are you doing?
Can you turn down your brightness so we can see your face?
Now you don't like my Asian glow.
It's too much glow. Oh, there we go. You have a real face again. Look at you adjusting the light.
I have a real one.
There we go.
Okay. I mean, I'm literally holding my laptop up. This is a lot of work. And now I can't see it because it's too dark.
Why don't you have your glasses on
anyway? We have to strike a balance
here. Why don't you have your glasses on?
Because these aren't my favorites.
It's fine.
They make a lot of glare. You look great. Okay. So she said that she was startled by a rabbit in a field.
Don't tell yourself lies. Sorry, we'll get that later.
In 1726, and that also links to Pinocchio. Last episode.
Okay, sorry.
If you're
sorry,
a first-time listener,
sorry,
and don't listen to every episode.
Yeah,
like and you should.
Who are you then?
Yeah, who are you then? Unless you're a new listener, and then welcome.
God damn you.
So maternal impressions. Let's get into it. I found a journal article from 1915.
Ooh.
In the Journal of Heredity, and this was an article written by the editor titled Maternal Impressions: Belief in Their Existence is Due to Unscientific Method of Thought. No evidence whatever that justifies faith in them. How the superstition originated. So it's a very long title. So at this time, eugenics was not entirely discredited by the scientific community.
Yeah.
So at this time, eugenics held sway in the scientific community. So this article was about kind of calling out and shaming people that were using the theory of maternal impressions as a shortcut to eugenics. And so this editor is saying, anything that calls itself eugenics, but which is not scientific, should expect only hostility from us. And goes on to talk about the theory of maternal impressions was proposed as a shortcut method of race betterment.
Mm-hmm.
So we've mentioned eugenics on the podcast before. I'm not going to get super into that right now, but it was a way of trying to manipulate reproduction to make a better race, which is racist. So that's why it's not something that we talk about much anymore or believe in or promote. So the theory of maternal impressions was proposed as a shortcut. And other names were called prenatal culture. So setting up the culture when
just like
the baby was
mom
inside.
To like put Mozart on their belly.
Sort of. So maybe maternal impression is not dead. Good point. And marking. It was
one.
Also called marking.
That's when my cat pees on me.
And some animal breeders.
Wait, is that what it means?
Having your cat pee on you?
No, not on me. Not on me. You said markings, and I said that's when my cat pees on things.
Well, it's like
is
you're
you
marking the unborn child.
Oh, like you're imprinting. Like, yes. Got it. Okay, you're making a mark on.
Yes.
You're peeing on the face of your child.
You're peeing on your baby, unborn baby's face in an attempt to improve its racial standing. Some bullshit. And some animal breeders had faith in this method. So if they wanted a black calf, they would keep a white cow in a stall with black cows and then be confident that the cow's offspring would be black.
Oh, so just by being around the black cows would somehow make it happen.
Yes, would create that prenatal culture, would mark the unborn baby.
So something, okay. So you could literally do that with anything, they're saying. Like, okay, which it does relate, like the Mozart babies, like all those different things that you do before they're born.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I was thinking, like, I don't think this is, like we say, oh, it's an outdated, discredited theory, this and that, but I don't think it entirely is. I think history runs deep and true and still exists.
Oh, yeah. And like the people who like, I want my kid to have this, so I'm only going to eat these things while pregnant. Like, well, I mean, like it's, there's all these different things that
absolutely
happen.
Absolutely.
Okay. So
this article went on to explain that if this method worked, it would be a very potent instrument for eugenics. So according to Maternal Impressions, if you wanted a superior baby, you would work to become superior yourself.
Hmm.
So you could imprint your characteristics upon your unborn child.
This is like the video we just watched. Like, use the positive self-talk and just stop.
Just stop.
Just stop thinking bad things. And
it's
then
so easy.
You will
just
be better.
It's
and then
so
you can pass
easy.
Your betterness onto your babies.
Exactly. And have superior babies.
Wow. No wonder there's so many superior babies around because it's so easy to do this.
It's so easy.
So easy.
So as one respected author of the time wrote, young people, quote, will be inspired to work hard to attain the best and highest that there is in them. Leading the lives that will only be a blessing to themselves.
Gosh,
not only
like
be a blessing
narcissism.
To themselves.
This is like a bunch of narcissists.
But to their succeeding generation. The idea. Oh, that's the end of the quote. End quote.
The idea.
So this idea has persisted throughout history. Mm-hmm. I learned that in the book of Genesis, Jacob used the concept of maternal impression to get the best of his father-in-law, Laban. He made a deal with his father-in-law that newly born spotted or striped animals would become Jacob's property. So Jacob decided to expose the flock to stripes so that he could sway the offspring to be striped and thereby increase his flock and his prosperity.
So do you think this kind of comes from the idea of like, so just... Okay, whatever horrible noise that is scraping across my laptop. Let's not do that. Okay,
that?
You're now banned from putting your laptop on my laptop.
I literally have to hold it in the air.
Okay, so do you think that part of this comes from like just if we think like evolutionarily?
That's a thing.
When, like, animals have to survive by being awake at nighttime, so then they become
nocturnal.
That's like adapting to their environment, but that's done like over like a very long period.
And through the process of not natural selection and
there are
survival of the fittest and things. But it does take time for those traits to be passed down.
But like the
nighttime
concept
awake
of like
traits.
When you're all the way, when you're the creature at the bottom of the sea. You don't need vision in the same way. You may need something else.
Right, you get that cool glowing dangle.
Dangle. Who does it do that? I don't know. Keep going.
Okay. So from a modern journal article in the Journal of Medical Humanities, author Karen Weingarten argued that maternal impressions work to create a lot of anxiety and stress and pressure for women, especially white women, to ensure that they felt responsible if anything was quote-unquote wrong with their child.
You mean if their child turned out to be a minority?
Or minority, or
because this sounds
disabled.
Little, she sounds a little racist there. Like, why is it?
Well, because
I feel like it'd be a lot of pressure for the non-white women. Because
no,
they tried to have their child turn white in the room of white people. Like, really?
Yeah,
more pressure for them.
Her point was like maternal impressions was probably more a theory followed by
rich white
women supremacists
with nothing better to do.
But it goes back to, you know, the Mozart baby thing. Like,
yeah.
If you listen to the Mozart and your baby isn't, you know, it doesn't have an IQ of 160, do we blame the mother? And so this is maternal impressions. It is all about the maternal impressions.
Well,
what was the experience of the baby?
First of all, all babies are gross. Second of all, they all end up being...
You know what's grosser than babies?
Adults.
Toddlers.
Oh. Yeah, you're in the toddler phase right now.
Today's Stella's second birthday.
Oh.
Yeah, you know what she's doing this morning? Picking her nose.
Oh. Yeah.
And wiping it on stuff.
Oh, that's fun.
It's so gross.
Babies are gross, toddlers are gross, and adults are gross. So, I mean, trying to make the perfect human just doesn't happen.
It doesn't exist.
Because guess what? No one cares. No one cares. Karen.
So, Karen, who I thought was on our side, but now I'm not sure, did say that maternal impressions was both an ableist and racialized understanding of inheritance that was only disregarded when eugenics appeared, which was also racist. So, and I'm not sure what that point is. But interestingly, and I got to read some cliff notes on the Scarlet Letter as part of my research.
Okay.
Did you read that in school?
I had a long time. Like, I honestly...
It's a long time. What do you remember?
Not much. I remember,
remember the
I remember the cover of the book.
Do you remember the Scarlet A?
Oh, man.
That's the whole point of it?
I don't.
So Hester Prynne committed adultery, which in the Puritan society was a major sin. And so as punishment had to wear the Scarlet Letter, which was an A that had to be sewn outside.
Yeah.
So she had a baby out of this adulterous act named Pearl. And Pearl in the book is very mischievous and imaginative, and her, you know, kind of uncontrollable, kind of a wild child. And her, that nature is portrayed as reflecting the sinful passion that led to her birth. And so she is a product and a symbol of the act of adultery, a sin and a crime, an act of love, an act of passion. So the author raises the issue of Pearl's nature and asks the question, can something good come from something evil?
Yes. Yes.
Well,
yes.
That was easy. I guess he didn't need to write the whole damn book.
No.
Maternal impression was used to attempt to explain babies born with abnormalities. Joseph Merrick, known as the Elephant Man.
This gets really gross when it's warm.
Oh, it needs to be cold. So Joseph Merrick explained that his mother was startled by an elephant while pregnant with him. So this was a very widely held theory.
Explanation.
Yes, an explanation for a lot of things. But it does put all the blame on the mother. Like, why did you go around elephants when you're pregnant?
Well, and I think this is still true again in today's society of, like, shaming moms for the environment that may be out of their control while pregnant. Like, again, if you are, say you're a victim of abuse and domestic violence, and then there's a lot of shaming that happens towards the mother about having the baby be in that environment, and then the assumption
right,
of what... What's your baby going to turn out like?
Yeah, why didn't you just leave? You know, I mean, if it was that easy. I mean, that's just like, just stop. It's not
just
that
stop.
Easy. It's very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of trauma going on that affects a lot of systems.
Get your laptop off my laptop.
Oh, my gosh. So bossy and territorial.
You scraped it. You scraped it. We had trust and you broke it.
I don't know why it was so scrapey.
It was such a scraped noise. I don't know. Keep going.
There's something rough on the bottom of my laptop. I probably have gravel.
Yeah, don't touch my laptop.
So, can I sidebar real quick?
I don't care. Sure. I mean, sure. I would love to hear it.
So, I have said in this thing, I use the word disability.
Yes.
Now, recently, because I'm a big believer in, like, the power of language and always trying to be conscientious and intentional about the language I use. So, just recently, I've seen... Oh my gosh, I'm trying so hard to keep my laptop very laptop. I've seen very different opinions on the use of words such as disability.
Yeah.
So on one hand, you're saying like something is wrong with somebody. Mm-hmm. And so I've always been like, ooh, shy away from that word. But then I just read this article that kind of put a totally different spin on it for me. Mm-hmm. And it said, and it was from an individual that calls themselves disabled proudly and loudly because they say they wouldn't be disabled. It's society that disables them by not having the systems in place to support the needs, like not having the ramps everywhere, not having, you know, the curbs that go down, not having the wide door openings or things like that, or rail like, everywhere.
Some people will say, like, because you're deaf, you're disabled. That's not, I mean, like.
Right, and try to fix it.
Yeah, but like kids with ADHD in classrooms, many would say that the way classrooms are set up aren't made to teach kids who have
ADHD. It doesn't honor neurodiversity. It makes it a problem, and then it creates shame and blame for the kids.
That can lead to all kinds of repercussions. Basically, this man's saying that I am disabled by society.
Yes.
I'm not able-bodied because of society.
Yes, and so this person was saying we should say people are disabled. So now I'm like, I don't know what to say.
I mean...
I'm just not going to say anything.
I mean, I think I always err on the side of, like, how do you prefer this to be brought up? And most of the time they just say, use my name.
You know? Right, but if you're presenting and, like, talking about a concept on a wider level, it's difficult. It's like, I don't know what to word.
I mean,
so I wanted to say why I use the word disabled. Okay. And that is why, I recently read that article that we need to call out that it's society that is disabling people.
But, like, instead of talking about, like, we need a ramp because disabled people need access to the building, it should just be we need a variety of forms of entrances.
So everybody can get in the damn building.
That serves everybody.
Yes.
Like, we don't even need to, I mean, like, yes, we want to call attention to it, but we don't necessarily have to, like.
Yes. Totally watch it. It just
Netflix?
Yeah, it gives it a completely different perspective that people need to watch if you're about people with disabilities. Watch Crip Camp. I felt the walls crumbling down for me.
Crumble. Let it crumble.
Yeah, I felt those implicit biases crumbling away. Okay, back to Mary Todd.
I'm waiting for these rabbits to come back.
Yeah, the rabbits are coming. So literally there. They're being birthed.
They're laboring out as we speak.
So Mary Toft had said that she had birthed these rabbits because in 1726 she had been working in a field and was startled by a rabbit. She and another woman ran after it but could not catch it. They also failed to catch another rabbit that they had chased. That same night, she dreamt she was in a field with those two rabbits in her lap and awakened with a sick fit, which lasted till morning.
Wait, sick fit?
I think throwing up.
Okay.
I think in the UK they say sick, like vomit.
I'm going to say that now. I'm having a sick fit.
From that time, for 3 months
you don't need
after,
to lift your laptop up. Put it down. Why are you holding it like that?
I don't know.
Just, like, set it down.
I don't know. I'm sweaty. And
drunk.
She had a constant and strong desire to eat rabbits, but being very poor and she couldn't procure any. So this brings in like that class piece because, you know, having rabbits to eat, I guess at that time was very popular if you could afford it.
Very posh.
Yes. So an obstetrician named John Howard, who seemed to have not maybe given the most thorough of OB examinations, was totally convinced of her story. And he wrote to England's greatest doctors and King George the First, telling them about these miraculous births and really highlighting the amazing moment when Mary Toft actually birthed 9 dead bunnies at once.
They were dead?
Or they're all dead when they're born, yes.
Ew, did she shove dead bunnies up her...
Don't be a spoiler! The king...
She spoiled it, not me.
The king sent his doctors to investigate. The medic who arrived when Mrs. Toft was in labor with her 15th rabbit was certain she was genuine and took some of her dead rabbit baby offspring back to London to show the king and the Prince of Wales. A surgeon was then sent by the royal household to have a look, and the surgeon was a little bit more sensible, down to earth, and examined the rabbits and found that there was corn in their poo inside their bodies. So
they had eaten.
They couldn't
food.
Have originated in Mary Toft's
in
womb. Because how would their little poo pellets get corn in them? I mean, it's always the corn in the poo that I think gives people
gives
away.
Because
it
yeah.
doesn't break down. It's just there. It's just a corn. It's
yeah.
so
never,
obvious.
Never eat corn on the night of a murder and then poop in the toilet. That corn will never go away.
You will be caught.
You will be caught. They're going to be like, the corn in the butt says it all.
Corn in the butt. So, meanwhile, Mrs. Toft was giving birth to other unusual things.
Oh.
Including a cat's legs.
Ew, I know too much. Ew.
And a hog's bladder. So.
What was her purpose? Why?
That, you tell me. Medical opinion was like, not sure what was going on, but then a man was caught sneaking a rabbit into Mrs. Toft's room. So she was eventually forced to admit she had manually inserted the dead rabbits and other various animal parts into her vagina. And then
dead?
Yes, and then allowed them to be removed as if she were giving birth.
Ugh, gross.
She was later charged with fraud and imprisonment.
I don't know. That's how you get some kind of disease. I don't know what it is, but you
no,
get
it's
it.
Lucky that she didn't get a serious bacterial infection.
Yeah, something.
Because
something's
here's the
dead
thing.
In you.
Once she put them in there, they had to stay in there for several weeks while
several
she,
weeks.
Yes, because
no,
you had to like go through the pregnancy.
What would that be? Because what? I mean, it decomposes inside. Mm-hmm. And it's letting off those gases of decomposition mm-hmm. and
I mean,
bacteria.
She could have barely, very easily died.
Ew.
So she was portrayed in the press
don't
at
do
the
this
time.
At home.
She was portrayed as this master
or
manipulator. No, don't ever put dead rabbits up here.
Or
cage, ever.
Pig's bladders or cat's legs.
Or cat's legs. Never.
Don't do
just
it.
Don't do it. I mean, if you have
medical,
a kink,
against medical advice.
We're not against kinks that don't hurt people, but I really think this could hurt you.
It could hurt an animal, so I'm against it. Don't do it.
Yeah, where were these rabbits? Where's the source of these rabbits?
These baby rabbits.
Were they cage-free?
Had corn in their poo, so they obviously were bred for birth.
They had some kind of life.
Before birth and death. Before death birth.
So, people have... researched her confessions because she was originally portrayed as this master like manipulator, but then it seemed like, well, was she maybe manipulated herself? Was she the one who came up with this, or were there other people involved?
Mm-hmm.
And then what would be the motivation? Nobody knows what the motivation is, so we can come up with our own theories. But mm-hmm. she So she had a, she was born into a hard
people
life.
People do weird shit all the time. I don't know.
So she's really born into this hard life, and so she did have a miscarriage at one time.
Trauma.
And then the next birth after that was several lumps of flesh that weren't human. And this was three legs of a cat, tabby color. This is from the obstetrician's notes, who helped deliver the lumps of flesh. He described them as three legs of a cat of tabby color, one leg of a rabbit. The guts were as a cat's, and in them were three pieces of the backbone of an eel. So she had this miscarriage, and then the next thing was this. So if she suffered traumatic loss from that and wanted to give birth to something.
But this obstetrician, like, women have very specific things happening during birth, like dilation, like contractions. She wouldn't be having any of those. And you can't fake dilating.
No, and she wasn't shoving them into her womb.
Yeah, it's
they're
like
just up in her vagina.
It sounds fishy to me that he wasn't in on it. He would have had to have been, or else he was just like, are you a doctor? You're not a doctor. You're either a doctor and you're in on it, or you're not a doctor and you shouldn't have
been. This may have been during the times when doctors didn't even know they should wash their hands after surgery and everybody was dying. I don't know what the timeline exactly
was. Smart enough to cut open the poo sack. So, like, I mean, let's
maybe that's the difference between the king's doctor and a country doctor for poor people.
Maybe not, though. Maybe not.
So you think the obstetrician was part of it?
I think that I'm going to give a little seed of credit to the medical community
right now. I think it's a valid theory. So this obstetrician thought this must be a supernatural occurrence.
See, yeah. No, a medical doctor is going to go for the scientific lane.
And then by this time, Mary Toft is a local celebrity, and so every time she birthed a rabbit,
it gave him notoriety.
Well, he would take it and put it in a jar at his lab.
And wasn't he the one that took it to the king in the first place?
Yeah.
Oh.
So when noblemen arrived, they learned she had just gone into labor with her 15th dead rabbit. They were able to witness the births of a couple more rabbits.
You want to go watch a lady give birth to dead rabbits? Spend her afternoon.
I mean, maybe everybody was hoping she'd give birth to a live rabbit. I mean, I wonder if there was some kind of sorrow and grieving.
Yeah, like it would have been a sign or something, all of a sudden alive.
Yeah,
rabbit.
I mean, I'm wondering, like,
yeah.
I couldn't find, I mean, this was 1726, so it wasn't quite, there was no YouTube videos I could watch. But I'm wondering, like, what her reaction was during these events. Like, was she surprised? Was she sad? Was she distressed? Was she happy?
She's an actress.
Was she like wanting to hold the dead rabbit in a maternal way? Was she horrified? I need more details.
I think it was, I mean, I don't know enough about her past to say that, because I know many people who've had a miscarriage that don't become delusional and shove
dead rabbits up their vagina.
Yeah, so like I don't necessarily want to just group that together of, oh, if you have a miscarriage,
it was one of the only motivations that I could find.
Yeah, no, and it's a fair one. I mean, it's a trauma, and it can be traumatizing. And who knows the history before that? Like, why is she alone? Is there a husband involved in here? I mean, I haven't heard anything about family at all.
She was married.
She was married.
Yes.
And what did he have to say?
And they'd had a couple of kids before this all happened.
Where is he during all this? Did he say he inseminated her with rabbits?
His name was Peter Rabbit.
I almost believed you for a second. I was like, no effing way.
Plot twist.
That's it. I'm done. I can't. I just world.
So after the porter was caught sneaking this little rabbit into Mary Toft's room, she initially refused to confess, but then the doctors threatened to cut her open to see if her reproductive organs were unusual, and then she confessed.
Like if she was actually pregnant?
No, to see if, like, there was something unusual about her organs that would would make rabbits. Baby. Rabbits.
Or rabbits. Baby rabbits.
Baby rabbits.
Is there anything unusual about you, ma'am, that will make you have babies? We're going to cut you open. No.
So there are thoughts that she might have had to have an accomplice to help get those rabbits up there.
Doctor. Who better to do it?
The rabbits were often delivered with their toenails intact.
Ow! That's going to scratch up your insides.
And the rabbits had to be hidden in her vagina for several weeks. So a lot of people don't think she acted alone. And in her confessions, she repeatedly blamed other people, such as her husband, her mother-in-law, or, interestingly, the wife of the local organ grinder. Of course.
What?
I don't know. So she was really vilified by the press. She was, you know, called a notorious and vile cheat. She did go to prison for 4 months. She had a public-facing jail cell so people could come and stare at her.
Ooh.
Shameful and horrible.
It's like in my nightmares.
Yeah. Eventually she was released and there wasn't really anything notable about her that I could find. She died at age 60. And the parish noted her as Mary Toft, widow, the impostress rabbit. So that's her legacy.
The white rabbit.
I mean, I'm always like, what is my legacy going to be? So hers was the impostress rabbit.
We can't really talk anything anymore. Just don't talk. I mean, now we'll just go down in history as, like, good for them. They were typical.
So here's a picture. There's a lot of, you know, back then they would, like, draw things for the press. So that's a picture of her holding a dead rabbit. The pretended rabbit breeder, it says. Mm. And then at the top, the picture you peeked at. This was like, they used to do like satire, these drawings. So this is her with a bunch of rabbits on the floor and some guy's hand is way up her skirts.
Is that the king? Because he has his long hair.
No, I think it's the obstetrician. There's all these people looking. They're all men, by the way. And then you can see the rabbit hand off at the door.
Sneaky.
And so this was done, that woodcut or whatever it is, was done to make fun of the, like, scientists and doctors that bought into it.
Got it.
So it's called The Wise Men of Godly Men in Consultation. So, yeah, that's the story of Mary Toft and her rabbits.
I learned things.
I did too.
So... my topic
now I can
today.
Kick back and drink.
My
Enjoy
topic
my
today.
Warm wine.
I don't have papers with me. I do have a couple tabs all up, but I'm going to talk about something that we know at least a little bit about, so it's going to help. Here we go. We're going to talk about.
You should probably get closer to the mic.
We're going to talk about dissociative identity disorder.
Oh, let's do.
I really am excited about talking about this. So first,
we're going to talk about the book Sybil.
Well, that's we can talk about whatever we want. So
oh, Split.
So yeah, so I'm just going to play just a quick snippet. What do you know about Split?
Well, I saw the movie.
Okay, well,
I watched all the.
What did you notice about the movie?
Shyamalama Ding Dong movies.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Movie. I don't think psychologically it was on point, but it was a good movie.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm just going to play a clip of this for us all really quick. Here we go. So at this point, he has women trapped in the basement.
Climbing a wall.
The beast is climbing the wall.
So this is one of the... personality.
One of the altars.
I've not seen this in a long time. Oh my god, is that the girl from The Queen's Gambit?
Yeah! Wow!
Holy macaroni!
Okay, so I'm just going to pause there with that. So,
I mean, right away, people with dissociative identity disorder can't climb walls.
No, not many can. So
right away.
I'm noticing
an inaccuracy.
Yeah. So the reason why I picked this topic, I wrote it down a while ago, is because I teach a psychopathology course, and dissociative identity disorder is on there, so I can teach new counselors. And I was shocked at how many students had heard about it a long time ago as multiple personality disorder, a long time ago, and had thought that it had basically been kiboshed as a diagnosis. So that was one perspective, that it just was proven to not be true and that these people were malingering, which means lying about the diagnosis.
No, it's in the DSM right now.
I know. It's been in the DSM for over 40 years.
Yeah, it's had different names, but
yes,
it's in there.
And it's so hard to get things in the DSM. And I was really stressing. I'm like, there are so many things that don't make it into the, like, complex trauma, for example.
Well, I think it's because it's been there. I think it's harder to get new things in.
Yes.
But if it's been in there from the beginning, I think they just keep it and call it different things.
Yeah.
And
it's like histrionic disorder.
Don't get me started.
It's like 0.4% of the population. Like, why is that even included? But it's just because it's been there. So, whatever.
Because of the patriarchy.
Yeah. So, it's getting a little dark again. Do you want to open your window a little? Thank you.
I would love to.
Too much.
Too
no, much. Open it on the other end. There we go. That's perfect.
Just there?
Yep. Okay. So it has become my passion in that course to change people's perspectives. To change people's perspectives about DID. And they often reference these movies, and they're like, it's so outlandish. People must be faking it. And I say, like, well, first of all, movies aren't realistic most of the time. There may be some decent representations,
right.
It's
called Hollywood fiction.
Yeah, and these are, like, really, with mental health in general, it's so easy to sensationalize it. And DID in particular used to be multiple personality disorder.
Yeah, MPD.
Now it's dissociative identity disorder, DID. And it's so easy to make it like, oh, there's an evil part of you, or like some association with like schizophrenia, like you're hearing things and will kind of be.
Yeah, I mean, that used to be the whole misconception of schizophrenia, was that it was, you had a split personality.
Yeah, there's this
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde kind of thing.
They're not related. So
not related.
People who have DID do not hear auditory voices or commands. That's actually different. But they call them alters. And what is most fascinating about this diagnosis is that it is trauma based.
Oh yeah. Severe trauma. And it's a survival reaction.
We dissociate identity. Or DID, dissociative identity disorder.
Yeah.
We dissociate when we've experienced trauma. It's our self-protection system. And we see this with trauma, with PTSD diagnoses, where people dissociate or have flashbacks, those sorts of things. So DID is like severe trauma. And severe trauma. And it is actually a myth that not many people have this diagnosis. First of all, there's actually plenty who don't report. It's very stigmatizing. People view you differently.
Well, a lot of people don't believe it even exists.
Yeah.
So if you bring it up in a mental health office, mm-hmm. almost guaranteed the first reaction that therapist is going to have is not true.
Yeah,
it's not true.
You're lying to me.
Yeah, let me try mm-hmm. to figure out if this is true or not. It's
yes.
not going to be an immediate like depression, like, okay, you have depression.
Oh, yeah, that wholehearted compassion.
It's going to be like, rule out or
doubt,
provisional.
Yeah. You start the counseling session with doubt. So I totally understand why people may not come to a counselor and come out or research paper. Like, mm-hmm. why would you? It's not safe to do so. You get judged and minimized.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that I really wanted to stress to my students, was this concept that it is not your job to prove or disprove anything, first of all. It's not.
Okay.
But that's, so anyways, with DID, that trauma split that happens, the community themselves often call them alters versus personalities, because it's not a personality disorder. That's not what
right.
it is. So it can sound a little
wrong. Yeah, that can be confusing.
Yeah, it's not a personality split. If you think of like ego states and ego state work, that's about parts of self that have kind of separated off for some reason or another.
Yes.
And so what do you think about counseling in terms of that, like for what counselors do with those people?
I think it's important that you are being client-centered and making sure that you are doing what the person came to you for, because they may not be coming to you to make wholeness.
Yes, yes.
And I think that a lot of, oh, did I get a gold star?
Gold star, what I wanted to hear. It was a risky question.
I mean, this kind of goes with what I was talking about.
Yeah,
though,
yeah.
That, you know, we can't assume somebody is broken or wrong or mm-hmm. whatever. People may be happy. I've worked with a client that it's like, and I made sure to clarify, I'm like, is your goal here to work towards integration? And they said, no. I'm like, fine.
Yeah, if it's not a problem, it's not a problem.
Well, we're not, and like, that's off the table. We'll just work, you know, and with what you want to work on.
Well, and just
because it's not our goal.
For example, if someone comes in and they have narcissistic personality disorder, because you're working with them on those things, right? If they leave and don't want to be in counseling and that's not a problem, they're just an asshole again. Like, you don't get to just, like,
no.
They have a diagnosis. They can just be them over there, and that's okay. But
no,
so people who have DID, I mean, sometimes they might go to a counselor, and actually most of the time it starts with coming in to better communicate between alters, because if consciousness were like a straight line, like you and I might experience consciousness as the straight line of experience, there's no interruptions, they may have a dotted line where there's these gaps and they don't really remember or things like maybe they, I read one personal account where it took them over 2 hours to get home for something that should have taken 20 minutes because their alters kept switching. And they get confused and they try to go back mm-hmm. and then it would switch and they go back. So you can see how time consuming things like that could be.
Yeah. So it can really interfere with functioning depending on the severity level.
It doesn't mean though that they have a problem with the alter. It's communication often.
And it's still their choice.
Yeah.
If they even want to address it. I mean, unless it gets to that point where we have to by law, you know, do something about it, but.
And I've never met or even heard of someone with DID who is like this serial killer, had the serial killer alter who was like evil. They can't.
So is that why we're talking about split?
Yeah, that's why I pulled
because
split
it
up.
Makes it seem like it really brings some big stigmatization to that diagnosis.
Yeah.
So people are going to worry that everybody that has alters is somehow
like
a beast.
Oh, like what's gonna happen?
Like they have this evil side that's gonna come out and climb the walls.
Yes. Yeah. And
oh my
it's
gosh,
just,
I get it.
And it's just not true. First
it's
of all, everything I've ever seen or even heard of, it may be like you may have an alter who's more mean, or like just mean in a sense of like people are mean, mm-hmm. not like beast is mean. Different. And in a normal human way, it's that type of a personality. And
okay.
And often, again, these are people who, they're not going to want to hurt you. They literally have this diagnosis because they've been hurt.
Yeah.
These are the definition of people who have been hurt. They're not the people that are hurting you. So I think that there's a huge stigma problem and not enough people talk about it. And that's why I think
we're talking about it.
We are. And I think
we're changing the world.
We're changing the world. It's so, I mean, these are like master's level students, right?
Yeah.
And it's surprising how strong, but this is true for a lot of diagnoses, how strong stigma and media.
Well, media is very powerful. I mean, the movie's called Split. That came out, 3 years ago or something-ish?
I'm sure it was longer than that, but yeah.
I think that said 2010. I didn't have my glasses on, but I think that's what I saw.
All right.
I think I saw roundish shapes on top of each other making an 8.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that just puts that out into the collective unconscious
mm-hmm.
or collective consciousness. Not unconscious. Sorry.
I'm
a youngin. But that split personality idea,
mm-hmm.
like it perseverates it.
Yeah. So
I bet if we did a survey and asked people.
I bet you anything. We should do that.
Yeah, like, see. What's schizophrenia? I bet they'd say, oh, you have a split personality.
We should do, like, you're a like mental a doctor survey. We'll table Mr. that Hyde. And do that again. Yeah, so.
I'm in the shadow.
It got darker. That's why you have to open the window more again. Sure, why not? I'll I'm give it all the
I'm
light.
I'm going all open.
Somehow it made it worse.
Too much.
Too much. Open the other one more. Like, slide it open more. Can you not slide the top? Or are you just opening the bottom?
No, I'm doing a pinch.
Oh, pinching with a clothespin? What did you actually pinch? What did you even do?
I just pinched it around.
Did you?
Yeah.
It's really dark still. Okay. Sure.
This is very demanding. And exacting.
And exacting. We all have parts of ourselves. It comes from the constant struggle of meeting demands of the world around us, expectations of the world around us, and then our inner desires conflicting. Like, that's part.
I accidentally let part of myself out at work today.
Did you? What was that like? What was that?
I try to stay very buttoned up, but it's a lot of pressure.
No, just speak from that part right now. Speak from that part right now. Speak as that part right now.
The part, no.
No, just be the part.
I don't.
Do it. This is fun.
Go. No, it's not it.
It is.
I've already been outed on this show so many times for being
share that part.
My beliefs.
But that right there is what happens is we don't feel like we can be whole.
No, I definitely have never felt like I could be whole. Except.
And that's usually social stigma.
The only
society,
time I ever felt like I could be totally myself was in roller derby.
I agree.
Because it allowed me to be very intelligent, because it mm-hmm. actually takes a lot
it's
of intelligence.
It's very smart, very strategy.
All the, you know, like, be crazy with your body, give it your all.
Yeah.
And also just raunchy, cussing, like, whatever. Like, mm-hmm. I felt like I could just, like...
Do whatever you wanted.
Yeah, I could be me and not hold back.
Wholeness.
I can't do that at work, and I let a little bit too much out today.
Well, and if we just talk about, you know, why this might happen, if someone experiences significant trauma, they have experienced part of themselves not being okay. And
and
I think we experience that on lesser
so
levels
disconnect.
All the time.
Yeah.
Or most of the time, you know, you can't always be the you 100% of the time. And then some people have to, you know, if your home life isn't safe, if you were raised in an abusive environment, if you had significant like sexual trauma happen at a young age, everything you do becomes tailored to help you survive.
Exactly. I'm surprised I don't have DID, honestly. I mean, I'm very familiar with compartmentalization. Like that's been me my whole entire life, but it's never disconnected.
Split and dissociated. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, it could be anyone. Dissociation, DID, could happen to anybody. However, it doesn't. And I think there may be factors with that that are linked to things that we don't fully understand yet, because, again, we don't have much research on it.
And is there a lot of research efforts put into this?
Well, no. And, again, if we don't have many people self-reporting, because I don't blame them, mm-hmm. then, you know, you're getting pieces of information and not the whole.
And I would worry that anybody that wants to research this is going to be biased on one side or the other.
Yes, yes. No, that's one thing. Like looking up articles, you get like contrast.
Yeah, I imagine that's so very
if
split.
Split. If you want to learn more about it in a very real way, like look at YouTube videos, but look up life with DID, and then you actually get people sharing what it's like for them, and you know. You can take it with a grain of salt if you want to, but ultimately, like, it's them sharing their actual experience versus somebody like us, who we don't know what it's like, but we're just giving our 2 cents.
Right.
It's better to hear it from them, and that's how I learned about it the most, was hearing about it from other people in their lives.
Yeah, hear people's voice. Hear their lived experience.
And, yeah, this is a trauma diagnosis. It's a trauma diagnosis. It should be under trauma.
It should. What's it under? Personality disorders?
No, it's just its own. It's its own section. So there's dissociative disorders. Because you can have.
What's in there? Like factitious?
Well, you can have.
Remembering and all that bullshit?
That's towards the end, but okay. There is dissociative disorder. Because you can have dissociative disorder, and that's just itself.
Like the fugue state stuff?
Yeah, like some of that, just like gaps in time, things like that. So
I haven't read my DSM for a while.
It falls under dissociative disorder. So it's in that, I mean, it makes sense, but it's like labeling one of the symptoms as the main label. But if we're talking about causes, like...
Yes, a good diagnosis should point to etiology and treatment, or it has no point.
Like histrionic
disorder. Exactly. Based on nothing scientific.
No, that diagnosis, by the way, is like it has come from there was a medical terminology for a while, and then it went through the Freudian phase. Even with like BPD, for example, for diagnosis, tell me how it is equally likely for men and women to have this diagnosis. Equally likely. And yet, okay, but then 78% who are diagnosed are women.
Yeah.
Okay. Something's wrong there. We're diagnosing people wrong.
Like we talked about in the hysteria one I covered when I believe I threw my DSM.
Yes.
Like that, I believe, is strongly rooted in the patriarchal roots of the DSM being men. I mean, not just the DSM, but the psychology field.
The medical model.
Being men not understanding, not attempting to understand women's experience and then pathologizing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, like that period disorder.
Yeah.
Like a sense of bloating. It's not a fucking sense.
Sense of bloating.
It's like actual bloating.
You're bloated. Yeah. You're bloated and your stomach sticks out and you can't button your pants.
Imagining out. That.
Yeah. No. No.
And the fact that that's still in there, like, that's why I only look at my DSM if I really need to, if I need a code for billing. Other than that, I know. Can't.
I watched a review about histrionic personality disorder, and it was a guy reviewing it, and his response was like, well, there's really not much scientific backing behind it. We don't really use it that much, like 0.4. It doesn't really do much harm, and it would take some work to reclassify these symptoms under another diagnosis. So, you know, oh, well.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. Meanwhile, it's not doing harm.
People are
the
being...
the 0.4? How about the 0.4?
Pathologized.
Yeah, the 0.4 are people, most likely women, being pathologized and stigmatized as having something wrong with their personalities.
I've often thought...
For no research.
Let's say women had been in the power back in the day.
Do you have any penile diagnoses we'd have
there? There'd be a lot of penile.
So many.
There'd be... Like, because these pathology ones with the BPD and the period one and the histrionics and the hysteria and whatever we call it now, that's all about, like, too much emotions.
Big emotions.
Yes. So let's say women would be in the ones creating all the field and the DSM.
Do you have any narcissists?
We'd have a lot more narcissism. We'd have a lot more problems with people not expressing emotions.
Absolutely.
Like, we pathologize that. Like, why don't you just talk about your feelings?
Just say it.
What's wrong with you?
Just yell at me already.
Yes, I want to fight. Fight. Let's fight. Like, it could totally be twisted.
Yes. Well,
and we would not have to work when we're on our heavy days. Like, it would just be built into society.
By the way, a lot of European countries understand this better than the U.S. does as far as women's health. And anyways, BPD, also a trauma diagnosis overall.
Yes. Also always linked to trauma. That's why I rarely diagnose that. I always...
High percentage of folks...
I always diagnose PTSD and not BPD.
Childhood sexual abuse.
Like, there's stigma still to that diagnosis.
It's huge. And it's, you know, just diagnose PTSD.
Yeah, that's what I do. I don't diagnose BPD.
If you've had a trauma background, that justifies what you're doing.
Yeah.
There's no reason to make it sound like there's something wrong with your personality because of it.
Exactly.
No, you're acting the way you are as a survival
it's a
mechanism.
Normal reaction to an abnormal situation. Who said that? Bessel van der Kolk?
Yeah, I think it might have been van der Kolk.
Probably. The Kolk.
So that's my topic for today. And I didn't like, I didn't want to bring in like a lot of, a lot of other stuff because I think it's about human experience and validating people's experiences. As it truth. Is.
We need, I think in our profession overall, we need to get off our high horse.
Mm-hmm.
We need to accept what people say and not try to outthink them. I think in our profession, we do that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to...
We're there to help.
Not feel like we need to protect them from themselves because that's such a power place to
yes.
come from. But... I mean, I talk to clinicians all the time that
mm-hmm.
really feel like they need to protect clients from themselves. It's like, no. People are allowed to make mistakes.
And you're supposed to. And you do every day.
I make mistakes every day.
Like, no. It's so easy to look from the outside of someone else's life and point out all
the things. Oh, my God. If I had somebody, like, overseeing me, if I was living in a little hamster crate...
Yeah, it's a lot.
I would be allowed to do nothing that I do now. I would not be allowed to lay in bed late at night and eat snacks and watch YouTube. I mean,
no, there's so.
They'd be like, "That's bad for you.
Uh-huh.
Why are you doing screen time before bed? Why are you eating snacks?
Why are you doing screen time?" I would probably throw my bowl of popcorn in their face.
No, I would instantly have a medical restraint situation.
I think this goes back to the love thyself video that we watched earlier today. It's great to like
we're coming full circle
to do self-care. It's great to take care of yourself, but you know, we're also human beings and we're not perfect all the time. It's okay yes. to stay home and lounge about, like, oh my gosh, who cares?
Yes, it's okay if you don't want to go to yoga,
because
even if you're a fucking yoga teacher,
what is that?
You want to do nothing that
you're
morning
literally comparing yourself to what you think other people think you should do for your free time.
And no. That's where I thought, like, that's where you would be lying to yourself.
Well, you can't go into that too much because this is different and they won't see this.
Oh,
yet.
Shit. Yeah. Oh, okay. Watch that other thing. That
watch this
bit.
Other video we're going to post. Okay. So we're just ranting at this moment. Anyways, I think that's really the gist of all I was going to say is DID, BPD, all these, if it goes into three letters, it's probably linked to trauma. PTSD. It's fine.
I hate acronyms.
They're just the worst. So, that's it.
Thanks for being DDT fans.
DDT. What is this? What did you just do?
Hashtag.
Oh, you did a hashtag. Okay.
Sorry.
All right.
It's
well.
Socials hand sign.
Until next time, don't follow the rabbit down the rabbit hole.
Oh, my God. Whoa. Let's destigmatize these diagnoses. Like,
let's destigmatize, not just destigmatize, let's rewrite mental health.
Let's blow up the DSM-5 once and for all.
Counselors, let's take it down.
And dismantle the patriarchy.
Tear it down, tear it down.
Tear down the wall.
Tear down the wall. Tear down the books.